is the old good morning man, Kermit Edney, with program number 225 in a series of 260 chapters dealing with the happenings and the people who made things happen here over the past 50 years, the WHKP years since 1946. This is about that time of the year when, since 1953, hundreds of volunteer workers began looking forward to wrapping up another successful United Way campaign, or as it was called back in 1953, a United Fund campaign. In the years before 1953, Hendersonville, like so many other communities around the nation, had no United Fund, nor United Way, nor even a community chest. In January, we had the most active of all the individual campaigns back then, the March of Dimes for Polio. It would be a number of years before Jonas Salk would develop the miracle vaccine, and because of the popularity of Franklin D. Roosevelt, who had suffered from polio, this campaign probably had more emotional support than most others. After Salk developed the vaccine, the organization To Survive changed emphasis to birth defects. February, we had American Heart Month and a campaign. Boy Scouts in February and had a campaign. In March, it was the American Red Cross and had a campaign, and Girl Scouts, and they had a campaign. April was time for the Cancer Drive. Salvation Army Week occurred in May, the Lions Club White Cane Drive in October. Plus, the local Lions Club ran a dime board on the corner of 4th and Main from Thanksgiving to Christmas to raise funds for all their benevolent programs. And, of course, the Salvation Army kettles came out on November 20th. Virtually everyone in the business district was either asking for money for some worthwhile need or charity, or you were being asked for money to contribute to some other cause you just didn't happen to be active in during that year. Most organizations set their budget after the campaign, so each of the groups tried to raise as much money as possible. There were no goals, and if you happened to, in your agency, inherit the best workers in a given year, you'd raise far more than in previous years, and other campaigns would come up short. I remember vividly being asked by Lloyd Biggerstaff of the Coca-Cola Company and Forrest Gardner of Advanced Thread, both movers and shakers in the Boy Scouts, to head up their fund drive. Considering the Coca-Cola account, I was told by my bosses, do it. I asked the scout leaders, what's your goal? We haven't set a goal. Just raise as much as you can. Could I have a list of people who've supported the scouts in the past? That's not necessary. We start fresh every year. Truly, I was blind, leading the blind. I had no idea of how much any person should give or how many people had ever given before. I remember making a call on my friend Mr. Frank Fitzsimmons Sr., at the State Trust Company, and he quickly responded, I'll match whatever Foffy Hunter gives. I got a flat turndown from Foffy, and as I glared at Mr. Fitz when walking out of the old State Trust Company, he chuckled and said to me, you can't imagine how much money I save just by saying I'll match Hunter. I will say, however, I found a way to get to Hunter substantially in a YMCA Capital Fund drive more than 30 years later. My Boy Scout effort was successful only because Mr. Ashley Houston, who had founded Houston Furniture Company, gave the Boy Scouts through me $1,000. That made it a success. I suppose of all the fundraisers staged back then, the one dreaded most was the Lions Club Dime Board. They had this huge board erected at the corner of 4th and Main in front of the West Side branch of the bank. And from about Thanksgiving to Christmas, there were always at least two lions working as pitchmen on the board. They were only after a dime, but a dime back then was worth more than a dollar today. And if you passed that abominable board five times a day, you had to cough up the dime or risk being yelled at, belittled with shouts of skinflint, tightwad. On occasion, I fully expected to be wrestled to the ground and have a dime taken from me. In those years, virtually all the money raised for any campaign came from downtown merchants and employees. In the industrial field, the plant manager simply refused to allow solicitors going through the plants begging for money on the grounds of public safety. The retirement community had not yet developed here, and farmers were spread so far apart they were hard to solicit. So, for the most part, money was raised in the downtown from the stores and the employees. The only exception was at Berkeley Mills, where they ran a plant community chest. They raised their own funds, and an employee committee decided how much the Berkeley Fund would give to the Red Cross, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, and other charities, as well as for their own benevolences within the Berkeley family. David Knotts, the executive director of the United Way, told me recently it was only in the last few years that Berkeley finally discontinued its community chest, and key employees solicit now directly for the United Way. In August of 1953, a groundswell of support began to build for a once-a-year drive, and a slogan was born, Give Once and for All. By October the 1st, 1953, the United concept had been endorsed by virtually every organization, civic, social, military, fraternal. And on Monday, we'll recall that first campaign and compare the results with the current drive as members of the seventh child of a seventh child, lucky enough to have been born here, the good sense never to leave, and with a job he's loved all his life. So,